Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to a new week of Locked On Rockets, your only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. And well, folks, we're entering this week very positive because the Rockets polished off a big win over the Memphis Grizzlies last night at Toyota Center, 123-108. Rockets now 44-19 on the year in firm command of a top three seed in the Western Conference. And really, the most important part of this is that the Rockets are now 2-0 in this hellacious six-game stretch, all against quality teams. We knew going in it was the Clippers, Grizzlies, Spurs, Jazz, Bulls, and Cavaliers. And going into that stretch off a loss, a very disappointing home loss to Indiana on Monday, a lot of us were just hoping to survive. 3-3 would have seemed tolerable. 4-2 would have been great. Well, now that you're 2-0, and really you're not just 2-0, the wins against the Clippers and Grizzlies, neither with even close. At this point, to get to 3-3, the Rockets just have to win one of the next four. And to get to 4-2, they've just got to win 2 of 4, be a 500 team over these next four games. So really, I'd say now 4-2 is the expectation, and you might can get greedy and even go 5-1 in this stretch. And the reason we can speak with that kind of confidence is because the Rockets aren't just winning, they are winning big. This is the type of Rockets play that we saw in late November, all of December, before the injuries. And the Rockets, they're not just going out and beating quality teams in the Clippers and Grizzlies, they are demolishing them. Basically a 30-point win over the Clippers. I know the final was 19, but I don't care what happened in the fourth quarter of that game. And then a sound 15-point win over the Grizzlies Saturday night at Toyota Center. These are the Rockets that we grew accustomed to when they were healthy. They're now 4-1 since the All-Star break. More importantly, they're 4-1 since the trade for Lou Williams, since getting everyone healthy. And this is the full complement of players, the depth that we had grown to expect and had become accustomed to before the injuries, the fatigue kind of took its toll in January and February. And now that you fortify the bench, swapping out Corey Brewer for Lou Williams, this is a really, really hard team to stop. And there are a lot of ways that you can look at this game on Saturday night. Certainly Clint Capella and Nene held their own against Marc Gasol inside. Grizzlies actually only out-rebounded the Rockets 46-43. So that was a huge positive. We'll get to that. Also, James Harden back in MVP form. That's a big positive as well. But I'm going to start from the team perspective, and it's something that I've been harping on for a while. But folks, I do not see the Grizzlies being a tough matchup for the Rockets at all. A lot of folks have thrown it out there on Twitter, this narrative that, well, the grit and grind Grizzlies are the perfect foil for Mike D'Antoni's pace and space system, and the Rockets lost their first two games of the year to Memphis. And so a lot of folks continue to push that narrative forward, even though, as I told you guys, if you actually watched those games and what happened, it was not the style that was a problem for the Rockets. The first game in Memphis, the Rockets' defense was dreadful. The Grizzlies shot over 50% from three. That is not sustainable. Second game, it was right when the Rockets were in the middle of their fatigue stretch in January. They were not particularly efficient to begin with. And then you had Tony Allen scoring 22 points on 80% plus shooting. Again, not sustainable. The last two games, the Rockets went into Memphis and won by 24. Last night, they won by 15 at home. And the bottom line is the Grizzlies just do not have the firepower to score with the Rockets. The final was 123-108, but really the reason it was even that high scoring was because both teams scored 30 in the fourth quarter because there were so many possessions. The Grizzlies went to hack a Capella, which did not work because Clint made 8 of his 10 free throws while getting hacked. But what that did, essentially it gave both teams added possessions, added time, so it allowed the Grizzlies to get to 108. But really, without that, it would have been a struggle for the Grizzlies to break 100. And it's certainly some credit to the Rockets' defense. They played well. I thought Capella and Nene were quality inside. Also, James Harden gave the Rockets some big defensive minutes defending in the post. But beyond that, this is just a Grizzlies team that, while certainly quality and they present a unique set of challenges, I do not think they have the firepower to score with the Rockets 4 times out of 7 in a 7-game series. The only counterpoint I heard that I would buy, someone on my Twitter said, well, they don't think that the Rockets would be in danger of losing to the Grizzlies in a series, but there would be a physical toll enacted from going up against that style and those players for seven games, or, well, then that could be seven games, it can be five or six, but basically saying that that physical toll would be costly in later rounds. And while I think it's fair to say that, the flip side is there's not going to be any easy matchup in the Western Conference playoffs. Your other likely matchup, Oklahoma City, every Oklahoma City game, every Oklahoma City-Houston game has gone down to the wire this year. We know the Rockets struggle to score in crunch time against the long physical defenders Oklahoma City can put out there. And then by the playoffs now with the Taj Gibson trade, they can throw Taj Gibson, Steven Adams, Enes Kanter, that front line at you along with the individual brilliance of Russell Westbrook. That's going to take a toll. Utah, you look at that option. Utah is basically Memphis on steroids. They're what Memphis used to be in regards to having a true interior presence in Rudy Gobert and all sorts of length and physicality from their defenders. And then there's the Clippers. I know the Rockets have fared well against the Clippers of late, but that's essentially going to be three all-star level players. So there's no easy route, no matter which of those four teams you get in the first round. So I would just take my chances against Memphis because, sure, are they going to give you a few bruises? Yes, absolutely. But from where I'm sitting, it's very difficult to concoct a scenario where they four times out of seven get the offense needed to stick with these Rockets. Now, why weren't they able to on Saturday evening? A lot of angles you can go with this. I'm going to start with the obvious, and it's James Harden. And really, the Rockets go as James Harden goes. After Monday night's loss to Indiana, I was critical of his reduced efficiency. I pointed out that he had shot 37%, just above that from the field in his last 11 games against Indiana. He was 5 of 17, 1 of 9 from 3. That wasn't good enough. Well, folks, the last two games and two games against better competition, the Clippers and Grizzlies, against the likes of Tony Allen, James Harden he's responded like an MVP. There's no other way to put it. In those two games, he's shooting over 53% from the field, 52% from the three-point arc. He's averaging 29.5 points a game and 10 assists. But again, it's that efficiency, over 50% from the field, over 50% from three. And again, these are against teams that historically defend him well. Up until the past year, Harden had a long list of subpar games against the Clippers. And you could also say the same about playing Tony Allen. So for Harden to kind of rediscover his magic, not just coming off a slump, but coming off a slump and then facing two playoff-quality defenses that he struggled with in the past, that shows you the level of commitment that he has had for the vast majority of this season. And really, what stands out to me, he was 9 of 13 from the line last night. And I know that's a little frustrating. I'm sure James will point out that he missed four free throws, 69% from the line. That's not good enough for what he expects. But it's getting to the line 13 times. I thought he was more aggressive. I thought he was able to do a lot of the things that he had done before this stretch where he became so dependent on the three-point arc. Because you look at his first two games out of the All-Star break, he shot just 6 free throws in New Orleans, and then he shot 10 free throws against Minnesota. That figure looks healthy, but he was on 0 late in the third. Essentially, he got fouled a lot late in the game, some intentionally, and so that kind of artificially massaged that figure a little bit. The last few games, now, Indiana, I talked about his reduced efficiency, but he did get to the line 17 times. That's big. Then he was 8 of 8 against the Clippers, and that was a game in which he never really had to put the pedal to the metal too much because the Rockets had such a big lead. And then 13 free throw attempts last night. Essentially, the two games that were somewhat competitive, the Pacers and the Grizzlies, he shot a combined 30 free throws. And that's a good way to judge how aggressive he is. It's tough to look at Harden's overall field goal attempts, compare them to his three-point field goal attempts, and then draw a conclusion about how aggressive he was, because, of course, when Harden gets fouled, unless he makes the shot, it doesn't count as a field goal attempt. So that makes the box score, the traditional analysis, a little difficult, but you can tell what James Harden is doing based on his free throw attempts, and so to see him bounce back and get to the line more frequently, that's a really positive sign. Now, of course, he needs to make a few more. I'm sure he's going to go to the gym today. The Rockets practice at noon and work on his form. I'm sure he's just going to tweak it a little bit, but bottom line, he's being more aggressive, and when the Rockets needed him most, when he was coming off a poor stretch and a subpar game against Indiana, and the Rockets entering this six-game hellacious stretch against Western Conference contenders, Harden has responded like the MVP that we all know he is. Other big thing for the Rockets offensively, what a night for Eric Gordon. 6 of 9 from behind the arc, 18 points. There's a great tweet during the game that I retweeted that really for the Rockets, it's simple. When they have two of the three out of Harden, Eric Gordon, and Ryan Anderson shooting well, they are essentially impossible to stop. And they had that on Saturday night. Now, Ryan Anderson shot just 1 of 10 from the field for 3 points in 24 minutes, which is subpar. But even with that, when you had Eric Gordon and James Harden that hot combined, Harden and Gordon were 12 of 19 from behind the arc. The Rockets just simply have so much firepower. And that's great to see from Eric, because really it had been a while. Even after he returned from his latest bout with back spasms, his first few games out of the chute, 4 of 15, 5 of 16, 5 of 13, 3 of 11. So to see Eric bounce back the way he has against the Clippers and the Grizzlies, that's the Eric Gordon that we saw in November and December, really through early January, when folks were saying that he was competing at a borderline all-star level. And then after the injuries start happening, the toe, the ankle, the back, non-serious, but certainly with a guy with the injury history, you have to kind of keep a wary and watchful eye on that situation. We're now seeing him bounce through to the other side, and this is the Eric Gordon that we saw early in the year. So you combine that with James Harden's really just MVP performance, there's no other way to put it, 33 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds on 9 of 15 shooting. These are the Rockets that we saw in November and December. This was the formula when they were at their best. But while Harden and Gordon were the storylines offensively, the other factor in this game that led the Rockets to a, well, comfortable 123-108 win over Memphis was the defense. And you look at it, we've seen the Rockets get obliterated on the glass a lot lately, both the Minnesota and Indiana games. They were beaten badly. And so you look at a team like Memphis that's going to play extended minutes to the likes of Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph, and you wonder, okay, how are the Rockets going to handle that? And actually, they fared very well. Just lost the rebounding battle 46-43, so essentially a draw. And the reasons they fared so well? Well, Clint Capela and Nene, again, just a couple nights after they played so well against DeAndre Jordan, combined 22 rebounds in that game and controlling the paint. They did it again against Marc Gasol. Clint had 24 points and 11 rebounds in his 29 minutes. Nene off the bench in 16 minutes had 11 points and 4 rebounds on 4 of 5 shooting. And I'm going to start with Clint. First things first, let's give credit to him for working on his free throws. When the Grizzlies were down big in the fourth quarter, they went to hack a Capela. Really, it was the only thing that Fizdale had left in his arsenal. Can't blame him for trying. But Capela made 8 of 10 free throws during the hacking period. And the big thing, this is not just a one-off. Clint, since coming back from the broken fibula on January 17th, in 20 games, folks, he is shooting 64.3% from the free throw line. And it's not an insignificant amount, because he's shooting almost 4 free throw attempts per game. So we have 20 games of basketball, basically 6 weeks, in which Clint Capela is a almost 65% free throw shooter. That is an incredible step forward from a guy who was shooting in the 30s his first 2 years at the NBA level. And the Rockets always believed in him. Certainly his first year in the D-League, when he shot 60% from the line with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, that always provided hope that it wasn't just that he didn't have touch, that it wasn't that his form was broken, it's just that, well, small sample size and a mental funk kind of going through at the NBA level. But it's good to actually see the results, because if it continues for forever, that's one thing I said going into this year, is that, well, if by his third year this is still continuing, then at some point this is who he is. So he needed to show something this year, and he is doing it, especially after that month off, which I'm sure gave him time to do a lot of shooting drills, because when you are not fully healthy, it gives you a lot of time to work on all the other aspects of your game, particularly your form, because, well, there's nothing else you can do physically. And so the results since then have been absolutely tremendous. And this is why the Rockets believe in Clint Capela so much. Guys, I know we know the deficiencies. We've seen the lapses in rim protection. We know the games when the Rockets have, like against Minnesota and Indiana, where at times it looks like a borderline layup drill. And then folks say, well, why are the Rockets so confident in center? Why did they not address the position? Why do folks like David Hardesty say the Rockets love their center rotation? And it's because of Clint Capela's attitude, his willingness to work. There are going to be bumps, but keep in mind, he's really just in his second year of NBA play. He basically didn't play his rookie season. So this is his second year at the NBA level. He is still extremely young. There are going to be bumps, but the key with Clint, no matter what happens, he keeps his head down, he goes to work, and you combine that with his natural gifts, his incredible body, his length, his athleticism, and that's a combination that the Rockets want to bet on moving forward. Now, the free throws, obviously, that's one big story. Rockets fans, I know, are very sensitive to the Hakka situations after Dwight Howard and Josh Smith, and so to see them come out on the other side of it, that's always fun, but the thing that really spoke to me about Clint Capela, there was a play early in the fourth quarter, and I'm sure a lot of you guys remember, it was a alley-oop from James to Clint. But what ended up happening on the play, it looked like for a split second that James Harden committed the cardinal sin in basketball, which was he went up in the air without really an idea of where he wanted to go. And that's what it looked like, but what was really happening, he went up in the air because in that split second, it caused Mark Gasol to hesitate. It caused Gasol to take a slight step out towards him to try and contest, and then when that happened, he softly lofted it up to Clint, who dunked it home, and of course, Clint knew what James was doing. He read the play perfectly, and so it wasn't just the fact that James was doing this, it was the fact that Clint Capela was ready to go up for the alley-oop and complete that all-in-one motion, because if it's not all-in-one motion, if Clint or whoever the center is has to gather himself, then Marc Gasol is going to have time to recover. So it has to be fluid, it has to be the kind of chemistry that James knows what Clint is thinking, Clint knows what James is thinking, and that play, in a nutshell, was what the Rockets never had with James and Dwight Howard. That is that chemistry issue that no matter how well a team looks on paper, do all the players buy in? Are they working together on and off the floor? And so that's something Clint Capela, for whatever reason, he clicks with the leadership of this team. He clicks with James Harden, and that matters. So you combine his physical gifts with his willingness to work. You see that with the free throws, his chemistry with the stars of this team, and you see why the Rockets have a long leash with him. Yes, he's young. Yes, there are bumps. Yes, he is clearly deficient in some areas in terms of rim protection and not where you would like to be. But even in his third year, he is still getting better. This was another step forward for him, 24-11 against someone like Marc Gasol. So this is why the Rockets, even though it's frustrating at times, still believe in Clint Capela so much and continue to give him the lion's share of minutes at center, because they believe, especially if he stays healthy, that he's going to come through on the other side. And it's easy to forget, but a lot of what's happened to Clint, I think, at least in terms of timing, the injury set him back. Because in late November, early December, if you go back and look at some of those games, Clint Capela was the second best player on the Rockets in that time period. He was going up against Rudy Gobert and looked like a borderline dominant big man. And then it looked like the injury kind of set him back in terms of his timing, his routine. Again, Clint is a young player, but now he's been out there for a month. He's starting to get back into a rhythm, and so now you're starting to see, in my opinion, Clint on the verge of a breakthrough, the same way we saw him go through in late November, when really he was a fringe all-star consideration at that point, based on the level of play he was giving you in the, again, about that three-week stretch from mid-November to early December. And not coincidentally, that's when the Rockets really started to take off against the likes of Utah, Golden State, had their big wins when Clint was really stepping forward. So I think to see him have the games he's had lately, especially against Marc Gasol, I mean, this was a game just like Wednesday against DeAndre Jordan in which it presented a unique challenge for Clint, and he responded in exactly the way that Rockets fans would hope that he would. The other factor, of course, Danae off the bench, 11 points and 4 rebounds. The Rockets have been trying to get Montrezl Harrell more minutes. It's not that they want him to get a DNP CD, but when you have Clint and Danae playing that well, it's tough to see where he fits in. And Danae, it's just tremendous to see that he's rounding into form at the perfect time. Danae, as a 34-year-old veteran, he knows what time of year it is. He knows the matchups when they most need him, and Marc Gasol and DeAndre Jordan, those are the kind of bodies where the Rockets could really use his veteran experience. But the one thing you worry about is, well, has he expended too much energy? Is he going to have it in March, April, a guy of his age? So to see him the last two games fill in this role off the bench, that's been tremendous. And the other big part of it, of course, because it's coming at the same time that Clint is playing better, you're not having to overextend Nene. Yes, Nene is efficient, but he's doing it in just 16 minutes. So that's the recipe to build on it. Yes, you want Nene to play well, but you also want him to do it in the same games that Clint is doing it, because by doing that, you can keep the rotation to where Clint is playing 29 minutes, Nene 16, and so that's a more sustainable model moving forward, because if you have to overextend Nene, if it's a matter of, well, he's playing well, but then you have to get him up to 20, 25 minutes a game because you're not getting the production from Clint or Montrezl Harrell, then you're going to risk Nene breaking down. So this is the perfect center rotation for the Rockets, and for a second straight game against a really elite opponent, DeAndre Jordan first, Marc Gasol second, the Rockets absolutely got it done in the middle, and that's why the Rockets, really on both ends of the floor, Harden and Gordon with the story offensively, but defensively, This was a really impressive performance for the Rockets, in my opinion. I know the Grizzlies scored 108, but again, the only reason they got to 108 was because of 30 points in the fourth quarter when they went to hack a Capella and essentially extended the game, giving them a ridiculous amount of possessions. Really, the Rockets, if not for that, probably would have held the Grizzlies closer to 100, and that is a terrific defensive performance when you combine it with the offense and the pace that we know the Rockets play with. Anyway, I think we can leave it there because, well, we don't want to get too high on any one game because it never gets any easier. The Rockets have San Antonio and Utah waiting the next two games. They're practicing today at Toyota Center at noon and then hitting the road for San Antonio this afternoon. They play tomorrow night. That's yet another statement game. I think it's a similar circumstance to Memphis. It's not the end of the world if you don't get it, but the Rockets don't want to be 1-3 against anybody. The only two Western Conference playoff teams that the Rockets entering the weekend had a losing record against were the Spurs and Grizzlies. They don't against the Grizzlies anymore. Now they're 2-2, and if the Rockets get that win in San Antonio tomorrow night, they would also be 2-2, and so I think that'd make them feel better. I don't think the Rockets have a confidence issue against the Spurs, because if you go back and look at the two games they've lost against the Spurs, especially the latter one in December when they had a 13-point lead with like 4 minutes to go, I mean, that's just comedically bad luck. The Rockets were 6 of 38 from three. Also did not have Clint Capella that game. By the way, I should have mentioned this in the Capella segment, but the Rockets were 0-2 against the Grizzlies without Clint Capella and 2-0 with him. So that shows you the impact that Clint Capella can have even against an opponent with a big-time big man like Marc Gasol. But, of course, Clint's going to be tested against the Spurs as well. The Rockets lost that game to the Spurs. It was the first that Capella was out with the broken fibula, and so now you're going to have Clint Capella in the middle, and it's a matchup that could be favorable to him because you know he's going to have extended minutes against Pau Gasol. Pau, at least, is limited defensively. So it's a matchup you would think that Clint could make some things happen with his athleticism, especially away from the ball. So that's a recipe. I think the formula for beating the Spurs is going to be fairly similar to what you had acted Saturday night in Memphis, but the Rockets certainly would like to get it. It would be another statement win because the Spurs, at this point, they're the only team playoff opponent the Rockets don't have a winning record against. So, yes, it'd be nice to get that game, and they're going to get a big opportunity to do that Monday night in San Antonio. And, of course, I look forward to discussing it with all of you guys here at Locked on Rockets. Again, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets, your only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked on Rockets. You can also email us at lockedonrockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me, suggestions for the show, or advertising inquiries. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us or rated us already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn, pretty much wherever you can listen to your podcast, just search for Locked on Rockets and you should be able to find any of our 150-some-odd episodes over the past 7 or 8 months. As I said just a few moments ago, Rockets are in San Antonio tomorrow night. They're practicing this afternoon at Toyota Center. We'll see if there's any news. Hopefully there's not, because really, there's usually not that much new news at practice other than injuries, and the Rockets did seem to come out of this Memphis game healthy, and, well, that's good, because they're 2-0 in this hellacious six-game stretch, but that still means there's four left. So Spurs on the road, then Utah at home, Chicago on the road, and Cleveland at home. Now, maybe that Cleveland game, Jonathan Fagan threw out last night, that's the second night of a road back-to-back. That's a setting that LeBron and Kyrie sat out last night in Miami, and of course, Kevin Love is already out. So maybe the Rockets get lucky. Personally, I wouldn't count on that, because I think the Cavaliers know that that's one of those statement games, Cavaliers, Rockets, national TV. I know they say they don't care big picture, but I think it's one of those. LeBron and Kyrie would love that stage. It would be a fun environment, so I'm not counting on the Rockets to get that break. You have to keep it in the back of your mind because, sure, they are resting players. Just personally, I'd be a little bit surprised. But really what that means is that for the next week, it's not going to get any easier for the Rockets. That's the bad news. The good news is that, well, they're playing their best ball they have in a long time. And again, as I said leading off the show, Rockets, it's not just they had the 123-108 win over Memphis. They're now 44-19 on the year, 4-5 since the All-Star break, since acquiring Lou Williams. So this is the team that a lot of us hoped they would be after making that trade. And even though we had that bump against Indiana, the Rockets are now showing the optimism that a lot of us have had in this team for a while, assuming health, assuming the fatigue issues resolve themselves. And, well, fortunately, they finally seem to have done just that. Anyway, look forward to talking to you guys tomorrow night. Again, another big win in San Antonio, Rockets Spurs. We'll have you covered here on Locked on Rockets. Until then, enjoy your Sunday, enjoy the start to your week, and I'll be talking with you again following the Spurs game.